Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's edition of 3K12 Education Talk Radio. My name's Larry Jacobs, and it's a pleasure to have you here today. It's a pleasure to have my guest here, too. He's the Executive Director of the National Superintendents Roundtable. That's Jim Harvey. He's been with us before. Great guy. Expert on education. I love having him on. And we're going to talk about vocational education today and apprenticeships and how that fits into the whole world of education, college and career ready, all that sort of stuff. It's really, really going to be an interesting show. I'll bring Jim on in just a second. I want you to know, and I think you already know this, we are now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ACE-ED.org. Please go over there. Join with us. Everything we do over there is free, including literally brand new issue of our online journal, which is absolutely excellent, called Equity and Access. It's absolutely terrific. We're the only media and education focusing strictly on these two major concerns in education. It's a wonderful magazine. We invite you to read it. All right, ace-ed.org. If you want, join our consortium. As I said, everything over there is free. This is an industry-supported consortium. So please, go over there and do it. We also keep our podcasts over there. Again, ace-ed.org. And without further ado, from all the way across the country from where I am, I'm in Maine. He's over in Seattle area, Jim Harvey. How you doing today, Jim?
Doing just fine, Larry. Delighted to be with you again.
Delighted to have you here, sir. And I thank you for getting up at 7:30 in your morning.
Well, you know, I realized after I got up, I've been working out of my house, that I better get to the office because we still have a landline in the office.
Are you in the office? Are you actually in the office?
I'm in the office at home. I'm working with a cell phone, and I know that doesn't work very well with your system.
I'll tell you, usually it does. The reason I'm always hesitant about cell phones is because people tend to move around when they have a cell phone.
Okay.
So if you can get a good connection, feel free to use the cell phone in the future, my friend. And I appreciate your good effort so early in the morning. I really do. Just real quick, from across the country, we got 10 inches of snow and a bit of a nor'easter here today. How's Seattle?
Kidding.
And no, it's okay.
Well, it's raining here in about 45 degrees, but that's typical
summertime
weather here in the winter.
Yeah. Summertime. Yeah. Okay. Got it. And what's going on? Out here it's crazy. I just have to ask because you're across the country with vaccinations. Have you been vaccinated yet?
I got my first vaccination last week.
You.
And I'm
good.
Scheduled for the second one on the 24th. I had to drive 3 hours to get it. So.
Oh, my Lord. What a system.
It's not terribly well organized
No.
here, but I was able to get it.
Well, I'm glad that happened here. I haven't been vaccinated yet, but here you simply call a number, leave your phone number and your age and birth date, and you hope that they'll call you back sometime before 2075. That's all there
right.
is to it.
That was true here, too, but we were also able to call around to some places and finally find a location.
Yeah, we can't do that here.
It's shameful how badly organized we are.
It really is. All things. It's just crazy. But we'll move on from there because Education Talk Radio works. The government and vaccination may not work, but Education Talk Radio works. And I'm glad that you got your shot. And good luck with. Do you have to drive 3 hours for the next one too?
Yes. Yeah. Go back to the same place. But it's important. I'm willing.
Oh,
to
absolutely.
Do it.
Do you have to go through the mountain passes? Is it that way you're going?
No, out towards the Olympic Peninsula. It involves taking a ferry.
Ferry boat, right, yeah, I know. Absolutely unbelievable is all I can tell you.
Yeah.
Nuts. Right. Speaking of schools, I remember, and you probably remember this too, I still remember getting my polio vaccines in school when I was a kid. You went to school, they had the needles, boom, and then the sugar cube.
I got mine in London. I was, I'm from Ireland. We were living in London at the time. I remember getting it twice. And I know there was a there was an a trial run in England. I think I was part of that. Then I got it again. In England, they would give you a medical exam once a year. So it was during. It wasn't scheduled for the polio vaccine, but it was part of the annual exam. We got it. I remember getting it very well. It was sort of a frightening thing. You know, those of us who are of that age remember these pictures of children in iron lungs.
Absolutely.
And it's just a sign of, you know, vaccination really eradicated polio in this country.
Without question.
In the Western world.
There were two. There was the Salk vaccine and there was the Sabin vaccine. And the Sabin was
right.
the sugar cubes. And the Salk was the vaccination.
The needle.
And
Yeah,
it was pretty amazing stuff, I got to tell you. Okay. My standing joke here is that here in Maine, we finally got the vaccines 100%. But unfortunately, that's the polio vaccine. We're still waiting on the COVID. So. What can I tell you?
Well,
but
I think it'll
anyway,
be the end of the Go ahead.
I thought of you. I got to tell you, I thought of you just after we planned this show last week. PBS NewsHour did a segment on the plumbing industry and how you can't find a plumber. Okay, and they talk to plumbing companies, and most plumbers today are making between $100,000 and $300,000 a year, okay, because they're charging $150 an hour, whatever the case may be. They deserve it. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying here, okay? And I got to thinking about vocational education, you know, and how if I was talking to a superintendent the other day, and I said he's in a little tiny district in Minnesota. And he said, you know, it's so hard to get our kids all ready for college. I said, don't get them for college. Take your 50 kids that graduated each year, tiny district, okay, and make them all plumbers. Not the richest district in America.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It's that simple. So this career in technical education and apprenticeships, you know, it's really something we need to talk about. That's why I'm so glad you wanted to discuss this with me today.
Right.
I
have to tell you this story because you reminded me of it. A psychiatrist, he couldn't get his kitchen sink unplugged, so he called a plumber, and the guy came in, and you know, 3 minutes, he unplugs the sink, and he gives the psychiatrist a bill for $100. And the psychiatrist says, $100? I'm a psychiatrist, and I only charge $50. And the plumber says, yeah, I used to charge $50 when I was a psychiatrist, too. So yeah, no. So this issue of finding people who are good with their hands and skilled in doing this work, I think is really important. You know, I say to people, I can't drive a nail. I'm flabbergasted at the technical skills that people have when they come, you know, to repair our HVAC systems at home or to replace them. I mean,
and it's more. By the way, it's more than just skills with your hands. I mean, I always say this. It's STEM. You can't do plumbing unless you understand the STEM. It's that simple.
Yep.
These are smart people.
That's right. It's a high level of both intellectual and practical skill, and I just don't have the practical skills, and I'm not sure I have the intellectual skills either. So, you know, as an immigrant, I've long believed that, you know, college was, you know, the route for opportunity for most people. But in recent years, I think this college for all approach, which has dominated K-12 policy thinking, it seriously eroded respect for traditional vocational education, and I think it's twisted our education system sideways. Meanwhile, corporations are complaining they can't find employees with the skills required for today's workforce. And at the federal level, you know, I pay a lot of attention to the federal budget. I think my calculations show that for every dollar we spend on preparing students for and enrolling them in institutions of higher education, we spend only 28 cents on career and technical education. So these non-college-bound youth, they really are the forgotten half in our schools.
Yep.
And you mentioned a rural district in Minnesota.
Yes.
It's the people in these Iron Range districts in Minnesota and Michigan and Wisconsin and central Pennsylvania and rural Maine and Ohio that are not oriented around attending a four-year college or university. They are being lost in our high school system. I was invited to a conference in Oxford last year at Ditchley. It was fabulous. The Ditchley House is where Churchill negotiated the Lend-Lease Agreement with Harry Hopkins on behalf of FDR. It's a 17th century, 16th century Elizabethan country house, and it was fabulous. But anyway, this issue of vocational education came up, and I said, in the United States, we've made the mistake of putting every student in the country on the first rung of a ladder that will lead you to a tenured faculty position in an Ivy League university. And not everyone is interested in that. So we need to find ways to respond to the needs of these kids.
Well, it's not, I have to tell
that
you,
aren't
Jim,
oriented
it's
around
not,
academic
it,
work.
It's not only the needs of the kids. K-12 education, and it always has been, is A, to prepare people to be good citizens. Okay, obviously we're doing just an okay job with that, with just the recent events, okay? And then, you know, it's also to prepare people, okay, for the jobs the country needs, not what we think the kids need.
Right,
okay?
Right.
That's why we created this Nazi system with which we have, okay, which is geared to go work at, bless their hearts, GM, for the whole life and get a gold watch at the end of your 50 years on the assembly line. Nothing wrong with that, I might add.
Yeah.
Okay? But the point is, we create these systems to accomplish what we need for the good of the student and the good of society, okay? And we seem to have forgotten. I'm agreeing with you. We seem to have forgotten what we're supposed to be doing here. We seem to have just simply said, oh, everybody, that phrase, which drives me crazy, college and career ready.
Right.
Okay.
Drives
me nuts because A, it's redundant. College is supposed to make your career ready. That's A, if you choose to go to college. But we still have to respect, understand, and move kids to be career ready, whether they go to college or not. And we have really dropped the ball on that. You got my dander up already, Mr. Harvey. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Well, so looking into this, I found that only about 2% of high school students in this country are enrolled in vocational schools.
Yes.
And we went to Germany and the Czech Republic last year.
Who did the national
career
and
vocational education
there? The superintendent's roundtable, right? The superintendent's roundtable.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
the national superintendent's roundtable. We went to look at apprenticeship training and vocational education programs in Germany and Prague. And what we found there was that whereas just 2% of our kids are enrolled in vocational education programs, 50% of the secondary school graduates in Germany complete their studies in dual vocational education training programs, they're VET programs they're called, in which they spend as much time in, get this, paid on-the-job apprenticeships as they do in the classrooms. So there they've got nearly 1.5 million kids participating in these programs, which support more than 300 approved training occupations and nearly 500,000 firms. And these firms, they employ these kids after they graduate because they know they have the skills they're looking for. Yeah. And in fact, these firms are actually the ones who pay the apprenticeships. They get about $1,000 a month plus all of the benefits that are available at these firms, because the government has said to the corporations, if you want to define the training that these kids are going to get, you have to help pay for it. And that's a very significant
thing. That ain't a bad idea.
Because our corporations...
That ain't a bad idea, yeah.
It ain't a bad idea, is it? Our corporations, which used to provide training, our corporations are now basically demanding that schools provide them with job-ready kids on demand.
Yeah, right.
As they graduate, you know, never mind the specificity of the skills that they're looking for.
How's that working out?
So there are, as I said, about 500. Oh, I didn't say this. There are about 500,000 apprentices in the United States, mostly in building trades. To get to the level that they have in Germany, where a much smaller country has 1.5 million young people in these apprenticeship programs, to get to German level, we'd need about 5 million kids. So I've been sort of banging the drum for a joint U.S. Department of Labor and U.S. Department of Education program that would sort of get something similar off the ground on a demonstration basis to see if we can't get kids in Cambria County, Pennsylvania, and, you know, the what I earlier called the Iron Ranges of the Midwest, get them into paid apprenticeship programs with the cooperation of unions and high schools and community colleges and, of course, corporations.
And companies.
And I'll go back to the beginning.
When I saw that PBS NewsHour thing, they had the plumbing companies. It's the same thing. They pay these people while they're being trained. They're dying to get people. Okay? And, you know, it's an interesting thing, Jim. One of the things that one of the gentlemen said, he owns a plumbing company, I think, in Detroit area. Okay? I think it was Detroit. Okay? Or maybe it was, might have been Minnesota. But at any rate, what he was saying, okay, he said, people come to me for an interview. This is a plumbing company. And he said they're dressed lousy. They have no idea what they're talking about, et cetera. All right?
You know, I shouldn't
and,
laugh.
You know, yeah, we're always talking about social-emotional skills, you know, and what we call, quote, soft skills. Those skills aren't so soft, okay? And, I mean, there's real opportunity out there in vocational trades, okay? Fantastic opportunity, okay?
Yeah,
and somehow
yeah.
we're letting it go. And I know you work at all with ACTE, the Career and Technical Education folks. In your quest to get this
done. We have not, but I should look into it. Well, as you were saying about this plumbing executive interviewing people, you only get one chance to make a good impression.
That's right. The first impression. You get one chance to make a first impression. Yeah.
Part of the proposal we're talking about would direct funds actually to schools to encourage schools to help kids with, you know, work habits like punctuality and interview basics, such as, you know, get yourself a haircut before you go for the interview. And,
well,
you know, don't go in shorts and bare feet and flip-flops.
Yeah, but we've created, Jim, I think the schools have created, if I may, and I hate to say this, a stigma around the vocational trades. Oh, you're going to be a plumber? Or you're going to be an electrician? Geez, I'm going to school. You know, we have to get out of that mode. I mean,
yeah,
the guys who come to my house and fix my stuff, A, they're terrific. B, I trust them implicitly. And they really know what they're doing, and they're smart guys. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean,
now,
I don't know why there's a stigma in the schools and why we don't push it more. I can't understand it.
When I ask these guys where they got their training, a surprisingly large number of them tell me they got it in the armed services.
There you go.
The armed services understands the significance of it, even if the schools don't. No, I think a lot of the attitude about in K-12 education, you know, to take a hard look at ourselves, is within the reward structure of the system itself, and a lot of that is dominated by higher education. That if you're not going into a white collar occupation, or you're not going into a 4-year college, then people, you know, put their nose in the air and say, well, that's, you know, we'll have to deal with you, but we'd rather not.
Well, I think the pandemic, and correct me if I'm wrong, may be changing that. Okay, I mean, a lot of people, the higher education is really under tremendous pressure right now, and I think things are going to really change. Yeah, really.
Well,
I hope.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to change, but I think you're quite right. I mean, there's the pre-pandemic that we've been used to. Now we're in the pandemic, and people are trying to, you know, handle it. What is K-12 education? What is higher education going to look like post-pandemic? And I think we really need a serious national discussion about that, because as one of the, you know, we've been doing Zoom meetings as opposed to in-person meetings, the National Superintendents Roundtable.
Sure.
And one of our speakers really had sort of a brilliant insight, an African-American woman from the University of Wisconsin. She said, I don't want to hear people talking about going back to normal.
Yep,
she said, normal is where all the problems were.
Bless her heart.
Yeah.
Bless her heart.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. She is so right. The mess. I think I've talked to you actually about this. You know, and you're from the UK, okay?
I'm from Ireland. That's not the UK.
Sorry, yep. I know. As I said that, I realized. Okay, but you were talking about London.
Oh, I put foot in my mouth.
Yeah, but I said that as I was thinking that as I said it. Okay, but my point is, World War II came and destroyed what was the British health system, where it wasn't nationalized or anything at that point. And after the war, with no system, you know, everything destroyed. Okay, after the Blitz and all that stuff, they created their National Health Service, which works.
Right.
Okay, it's not perfect, but it works. Okay, and it grew out of this chaos. All right, and it's the same thing here. Your friend, okay, that person from the University of Wisconsin is absolutely right. Okay, we've got an opportunity here. Okay, not to go back to normal, which had created all this craziness. Okay, and make real changes like the one you're talking about, with more emphasis on vocational education, which I think is really important for the students, for the schools, and for the society. Okay, but I got to ask you, you know, how many superintendents do you have in the round table right now?
100, give or take 3 or 4 every year.
Okay, so
some is
103,
some is 97. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. All right. So my question is, as you talk about this with them, now they're in charge of school districts. And you got them across the gamut here from all over the country, all right? What are they saying about vocational ed? Do they get this? You must talk to them. They're in charge. They can actually make change. What's happening? Are they making change?
Well, yes, they do get it, and that's why so many of them accompanied us to go to Europe to see what the possibilities were there, including a superintendent from Virginia, Minnesota.
yes.
Talking about the Iron Range,
yeah.
They understand the needs of their students. One of our superintendents in a very rural district in Oklahoma that spread out over 60 square miles, and she had 300 students from K-12 through senior year.
Wow!
She put in place in Oklahoma, of all places, an underwater welding system. Because
good
people were
her.
Looking for welding in some lakes in the area.
That's
and
right.
Her graduates,
and down in Louisiana, not so far away, in Texas.
Right.
Not so far
her
away.
Her graduates are greatly in demand in Louisiana and Florida. So superintendents do, in fact, get this, and the best of them are working with their local business community and their local unions, if they have unions, to get this put in place. And what she found, similar to what you're talking about with the plumbers, what she found was that the welding companies in her area in Oklahoma, they were willing to come in with all of the equipment that was needed in that school system to train these kids. The school system didn't have to lay out a dime to get the equipment. The companies were so eager to get skilled graduates.
Right, and the schools need to give these children, these students, social-emotional learning, academic training so that they are literate and read and write. No, that's the role of the schools. And then to do more to get these kids pointed in the right direction. Okay, it's that simple. And when, you're much older than me. You're about 2,000 years old. When did this
that's
college
right,
in
yeah,
career,
I'm as
yeah,
old,
when
as,
did this college
I'm as, old as Methuselah.
Yeah, that's right. You were talking about getting the shot after the war, and that was the Crimean War you were talking about. Right. So, right. Florence Nightingale, whatever, right? And all that sort of stuff. So my question, Jim, when did that phrase, college and career ready, when did that take over? Do you know?
I think it took over in the early aughts. As part of No Child Left Behind. Now, don't hold me to that, but that's sort of my impression. And I want to tell you something else, too. I am convinced that the people who are the policy types and the testing agencies that are pushing kids towards four-year college degrees invented that phrase because they also at the same time put forward what I consider to be another canard, that the skills required for success in college are the same skills that are required for success in work. And I don't believe that's true, but it's not surprising that the companies that have been making fortunes testing kids would say the same test that we're giving you to get you into college is the same test that will test your ability to succeed in the world of work. There's another point I want to make that I think is significant, Larry.
Please do.
It's not just that the society benefits from these kids being in apprenticeship, paid apprenticeships. The local communities do too. When you have communities with high levels of unemployment in urban areas or in rural areas that are desperate for income to keep the house afloat, a working child, is a working teenager, somebody who's being paid as a teenager and learning skills for the future, is a very, very valuable asset.
It's very practical.
Very, very practical. And it keeps these kids focused on school because they see the value of what they're learning in the classroom being applied on the job. Whereas today it's all very abstract. I'm fond of saying I have not solved a quadratic equation for 50 years.
I got news for you. Let me make the point. I couldn't solve them when I was supposed to solve them in high school. So don't even worry about that. I never solved them.
Well, after a lot of hard work, I solved a couple. But you know, why was I put through that agony of, I understand mathematical thinking is significant, but the formalization and the formal way it's taught.
It was agony.
It was agony.
With me because it was out of context. It had no purpose.
You could see no purpose to it. You could see no purpose to it.
Right.
But now suddenly, if you're trying to learn the skills of a plumber or a carpenter or somebody running a numerically controlled machine in the modern sort of workplace, suddenly that math begins to make sense. Now I know why I need to be able to solve these problems because I actually need to figure this out.
Stifle that way of thinking. To create a different path with the same knowledge. It's unbelievable. I have to ask you something, and I actually don't know this, okay? I don't want to blame the guy before I even know. You know, we just had the Trump administration. I don't know if you know that or not. We just had President Trump. That wasn't a bad
thing. So I'm told.
We did actually have that. Okay. And now we have President Biden. Who knows where that's going to go? But as you look at the Obama, Trump, Biden, where are they on all this, on vocational ed? You know, Obama had the race to the top. Everybody's got to be the best. You know, what's going on? Where are we now with Biden?
Well, I think from what I'm able to glean about the Biden administration, first of all, the Trump administration had no interest of any kind in public education, and his Secretary of Education was really devoted to the destruction of it through.
I agree with you, but I might have missed something.
My impression is that Biden is committed to reining in charters and choice. He's not going to go for vouchers. He has said, I don't know what he's going to do to follow up on this, that teaching to the test has not been a good idea, so I think he's going to be willing to rethink this. And Biden comes from a working-class Irish Catholic background in Scranton. And I'm hoping that I can find somebody in the administration that will get his attention to this issue.
Well, I hope so. Call Dr. Cardona. Okay, Dr. Cardona, the new Secretary of Education, is a working-class guy. Okay,
that's right.
He's out of Meriden, Connecticut. I know that district really well. In fact, his wife still works there. Okay, and they are—he's a down-to-earth guy. Okay, boy, he's really good.
So I'm told. So I'm told. And this deputy secretary that he has from California is also very good.
Well, who's that? I don't know that person's name.
I'm trying to remember her name, but she's a former superintendent in San Diego. San Diego. And both are career lifelong educators.
Isn't that something? Yeah. It's just like Betsy DeVos.
No. she's a lifelong money grubber.
Yeah, she'll really tell me more I don't know. Oh, my God. I have you on here to tell me things I don't know, not things I know. It's just unbelievable. I agree with you. We got to get the corporations working on this, the companies working on this. They will do that. These guys are good. And, something else about Biden, his wife, Jill, is a community college professor.
Mm-hmm.
And community colleges are really good at what you're talking about. Okay.
Yes. They should be part of this partnership too.
Yeah, they should be. And Jill's mm-hmm. there to guide it along. Jim, as always, this was great. Anything? What else is going on with the roundtable? Anything else you're looking at these days?
Well, we're looking at hoping to do a series in Education Week on leadership from the kitchen table. So many of our superintendents
yeah.
are working out of their houses. So,
that's
you know,
right.
How have they coped with this massive crisis? And I want to say that I believe that while everyone else was fumbling around with what to do in the midst of this crisis, educators really stepped up to the
they
plate.
Did. They did.
They turned on a dime. You know, it wasn't perfect. Everyone's griping about this failure and that failure. But they provided meals to tens of millions of kids.
Yeah.
And they provided online instruction to 50 million kids. And they've barely been thanked for it. They've just been criticized because it hasn't been perfect.
Yeah. And, nothing's perfect. But I'll tell you, we have learned a lot from all this. Okay? And I agree with your friend. We can't go back to the old way. Okay,
yeah.
I was thinking
yep.
just
yep.
about that today. Because today, as I said earlier, we're having like 10 inches of snow. Normally it would be a snow day. Today it's not a snow day because all the kids are home anyway.
Well, no. I said to somebody, yeah. shame on those killjoys that are trying to do
yeah.
with snow days.
Yeah, they're gone.
Actually,
they're
the
gone.
Kids may need a snow day now more than they did when they were attending regular
they
school.
They probably
I
mean, might, okay? But
they're,
right now they're gone, okay? And so
yeah,
it's just really, it's going to be a brave new world, hopefully a better one. Jim, this was great. It's always a pleasure to have you here. We'll do more, I promise you.
It's great talking to you. We need to promote a White House conference on children's welfare.
I would love it. We should do it. Okay,
yeah.
I'll talk to you.
Yeah.
Have you, by the way, go over to our website, seriously, ace-ed.org, and see all the stuff we're doing. We'd love, if you wanted to, you could write us a column every issue
of
the magazine.
I did write a column, but you know.
That's right, you did.
Yeah,
right?
So what happened to that?
it was probably printed.
No, I don't think it was.
Well, I'm going to follow up on all this. You and I are going to talk, and I'll talk with Maya today. So I'm really glad you brought that up because when we miss stuff, we miss stuff. Okay?
Okay.
So let's get it together.
Larry,
seriously,
great
buddy.
Connecting with you again. I always enjoy these chats.
Yeah, and let's make this column a regular thing. Okay?
All
we
right.
just published
okay,
an issue, but
that.
Every
yeah.
other month we publish, and we'd love to have you in there. Okay?
Okay,
so I'm gonna, you're going to get an email from me today. Okay?
All right.
And, by
Talk
the way,
soon.
Everybody, for Jim, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. So, again, thanks a million, buddy.
Not at all. Good speaking
okay.
with you. Thanks, Larry. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Having me on. I appreciate
oh,
the
you're
opportunity.
Welcome.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
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 Okay, everybody. Yeah. Jim Harvey, is he great or what? All right, National Superintendent's Roundtable. We'll find out what happened to what he wrote. That's weird. Okay? And, well, all right, so that's good. We're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Join with us over there for equity. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, enjoy the magazine over there. Thanks for listening.